Reading got back on the horse after a bad Monday loss to the Trotters with a point against the high-flying Imps yesterday at the Stade d'Essiel. With four games left to play, would you believe it? How close are we to theoretically and mathematically securing safety in League One? Welcome back to the Tarlas End podcast. This is episode 375. I don't know why I always sound so shocked, because numbers follow a fairly rigid pattern in any language that you speak. But we are back after a little bit of a hiatus due to a number of differing reasons, really. But we are live and exclusive. Exactly, yeah, live and exclusive right now. But of course, you know, you're going to get this on a recording. Here to join me, as always, is Mr. Ross Webber from across the pond. How are you? What's the weather doing at the moment over there?
I'm doing all right. I'm annoyed. We got you guys might know that in America, Memorial Day is kind of considered the start of summer. And that is less than, what, I think it's 7 weeks away. And I'm looking at two...
Are Memorial holidays in 7 weeks?
Memorial Day, yeah. So summer in America goes from Memorial Day until Labor Day, technically. Right. And you're not allowed to wear white after Labor Day because summer's over. But instead of, with that a few weeks around the corner, I'm looking at 2 feet of snow again. So this is the winter that will never end. It's barging back into my state, I suppose, going, and another thing, over and over again. And so I didn't get to enjoy some nice Easter sunshine, but at least got a lot of football to tide us over.
Well, it sort of broke through yesterday, which was quite nice. So it was nice to be in the sun for a little bit. And only one home game left, which is crazy when you think about it. Can't remember the season ending in April, which is quite a feat. But I think we're ready for it. I think we are. We're gonna talk about potentially a well-earned point. We might have some different views on that. I think in hindsight, maybe it was potentially 2 points dropped, if that's controversial to say. I don't know. We're gonna get into it in a minute. But before we do that, thank you so much, as always, to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who continue to give us all the things we need. We've bought some new tech. I've tried to sort out my mic over the break, which hopefully
you're sounding good.
Nice and clearly. Hopefully,
give us
anyway.
Warmth ratings for Ben. Well. Oh God, you're all over the place.
Much to Ross's disappointment, we've got a GoPro. So we are those guys.
I'm disappointed.
Now.
I'm just wondering what you're going to do with it. Special sports bra coming next, so that you can keep all of your stat tracking done. You know, how many laps of the stadium can you do per game?
Do you know what? That could work. What a great idea for brand new content in the off season, as we discovered.
Right,
let's stop waffling. Let's get into the recap against the Imps. What a lovely nickname for such a shithousery team, as we're going to discuss in just a moment. So we'll be back after this very short break.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, 1-1 at the Select Carleton Stadium. I think all things considered, based on where we've been and where they've been, you know, pretty good point for us. I think there were some people who felt potentially there was 2 points dropped, which we'll get into in a little while. Kind of quick, you know, debrief of. Well, very condensed version of the highlights, if you like. Fairly even first half, I'd say. We had a couple of chances without really pushing their keeper into doing anything. We don't like talking about the refs, and we'll get to him in a minute. But he kind of stole the show, certainly in the first half. We could have had at least two penalties, possibly even three. From the shot from, I think it was Makairu in the end who tried to convert it, and
yeah,
the defender just sort of cleared it with every part of his body that wasn't legal, effectively. There was also a bit of a push in the build up to that as well, which could have been given too. But you know, overall, fairly even first half. I think they had one that was just from, I think it was, I can't remember who it was actually. Who was it? Teddy Bishop, maybe?
There's a penalty shout for Nibs as well in the box where you might have mentioned that, but he gets a trip, but he pushed it probably. It's one of those where he's pushed it too far away from his body with his first touch, so the ref won't give it. where they're looking for excuses not to give fouls in the box often. Yeah. And that's one of them that will, yeah, often take it away. I didn't think that one was a penalty, but the handball on the line, obviously. Horrendous. Yes, that was a penalty and probably a red card as well.
Yeah. Teddy Bishop, I think, scooped over sort of, you know, midway through the first half for them as well. But they didn't really do much to threaten our goal in that first period. And then, of course, you know, the tide turned, but Lincoln came out a little bit stronger, I felt, in the second half. Fair individuals for us were a little bit stronger. I thought Ben Elliott had a better second half. And then, of course, you know, I say classic Reading, but we give the ball away very cheaply. There's very little pressure, very little pressing for the cross to come in. And look, it was a good header from Draper, I think it was, 72nd minute.
Yep.
Really, really good finish. Pereira was pretty much close to pushing it away, but couldn't quite grasp it out. And then, you know, we had sort of a period of 10, 11 minutes where we didn't really give in. And I think that's, you know, in recent weeks, we said this on the pod and various articles over the last couple of weeks, we didn't give in to this team. And, you know, we didn't stop. And Bindon, although weirdly the scoreboard said it was Nibs who scored the goal, including our own editor, who is a complete idiot, by the way, on the tweet. both Ross and I think, dived in pretty quick there. But, you know, it was Bindon to score his first home goal, which was a really, really nice header. Classic celebration as well. Didn't over-celebrate it. Little hand in the air and back towards the halfway line to restart the game. So all proper in all, you know, probably a fair result.
It's a proper centre-back celebration. He's making his way back to his position at the same time as actually celebrating the thing.
He's ready for the next storm. That's what he was doing.
Exactly.
I guess really was the first place to start, and it threw me a little bit, was the team selection. What did you make of that overall to start with?
Yeah, so it was interesting. Obviously, they've been playing in a 4-2-3-1 primarily over the last few weeks, but we know that they have been able to play in other formations. So 4-1-4-1 is one that we've seen probably actually the most this season, if I think back to, you know, and I try and compare how many games we played in each system. And it did appear that we went back to that today, or back to that yesterday, sorry. It was an interesting one, obviously, Ben Elliott coming in, and this is the first time in a long time that wing wasn't going to have one of Craig or Savage either behind him, you know, out of possession or just alongside him. So he's going to have to do work by himself. I thought that this was the right place to put Elliott finally, and even Sellers admitted that after the game. Having him play in this sort of eight position is something that clearly works better for him than playing in a wide position. And interestingly, before the game, I was actually wondering if Makairu might come back into the team, because I thought Kelvin struggled against Bolton. And I think that is the kind of, you know, result, the 5-2 against Bolton, that requires some sort of reaction from the coaching staff. So that's probably where the desire to change things up came from. I don't think McIvory was actually good enough to, you know, sort of earn that desire from me to have him play there again. But, you know, I thought it was interesting. But yeah, 4-1-4-1, sort of 4-1-3-2 out of possession with Nibs pushing forward. I think it was about putting wing where they thought he was going to be most effective in that game. And whether or not that was actually towards the back, I struggle with the idea of wing being the one who's putting the build-up play together personally. But it seemed to be about getting wing in the position that they wanted him in, and it led to Reading completely dominating a team that have been scoring for fun recently. They didn't allow really a good chance all game. You know, that goal is Bindon and Aziz, you know, getting beat, and Pereira just about not quite getting there. So, I mean, you could kind of share blame on individuals between three of them there. So, yeah, odd one. But no, I think that after Bolton, it probably required some lineup changes.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I don't think you could argue, like, you know, you lose 5-2. For me, I think the manner of that performance was not great. I don't think anyone really doubted the result from the off. But, you know, to kind of ship five goals unnecessarily I say unnecessarily, there was at least three in that lot that you'd look at and go, that shouldn't be happening at all. I mean, I think with Elliot, if you look at the kind of the bare essentials, really, and I like him as a player, and you know, you've always been really clear in terms of how he should be playing in the middle. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't been, and that's on Sellers, really, in terms of constantly trying to play him on the wing and trying to get the same result out of him. Do you think that based on his previous performances, he deserved to start in that team yesterday against a team that, you know, I think we're unbeaten in 16 or something and now 17? You know,
that's a really good question. That's a really good question.
I try.
Yeah. No, but that is a really good question, because we talk about, like, you know, like when you, I don't know, like the FIFA-ification of soccer, of football, sorry. People, you know, they want to think about players being a certain level all the time, but they're not. Like, they go through phases mentally, physically, like maybe their right leg or whatever is bothering them for a month or whatever. But with Elliot, I think that what we've always seen is that he's very good at one particular thing, and that one particular thing is wiggling between bodies and getting the ball between, like, through tight spaces. He's like a letter opener. He's just capable of receiving the ball on the turn and using that sort of, he'll use a directional first touch. So often when we're coaching, we'll try and get kids to sort of take the ball on the back foot. And when they do that, it allows sort of like, I can feel the guy coming from my left side, so I'm going to make this first touch go to my right side. And then I'm going to use that momentum to turn and then turn and go up the field. Elliot's really good at that. And Elliot's really good at getting through lines. And so having that sort of like two line midfield that we've been using for ages now, whether with the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-1-4-1, meant that Elliot was going to be able to get in those little spaces, you know, in between their midfield and defense. And I thought that if that was what Sellers was going for in this game, his competition for that spot is likely Savage or Craig, or even Wing, if they want to put, you know, one of Savage or Craig further back. You know, we saw Craig there in that position that Wing was in yesterday a lot when we were playing the 4-1-4-1 more. But I think Elliot was the best option for that. Sellers described it as an 8, and I think that's accurate. I think he's probably the best 8, pure 8 that we have. I think that Savage is close, personally. I think I really like Savage as a player, but I think he's more of a 6/8. And Craig, to me, is very much a 6. So, yeah, I think as a pure 8, Elliot was probably the guy who had most earned the right to be there. I know it's difficult when a player's only playing in little flashes, but it would have become clear that he wasn't going to be a winger. He's not fast enough for that. He's just not, you know, he has to slow the play down really a lot of the time when he's on the wing. But yeah, in this spot in the middle, thought he was good.
I certainly think he had a better second half, and you know, without jumping ahead too much here, I don't see any, unless they're enforced changes, I don't see any changes for the Bristol Rovers game, you know, coming up on Tuesday. And there shouldn't be, really, based on yesterday. However, when you look at the Bolton game, you know, on the previous Monday, there were a number of players in that team that didn't have good games. You know, Kelvin was one of them, and he was, you know, removed. I don't think Dorset was fantastic at all, really, on Monday. I don't think Aziz was particularly good. I don't think Smith was very good. And yet, three of those players kept their space. And when you have, when you're looking for consistency, and you could look at any teams in, well, I say our lifetime, I'm a little bit older than you, Ross, which I, you know, I hate to admit, but, like, you know, you look at the great Arsenal teams, they were built on, you know, one absolutely superb partnerships, you know, Adams, Keown, Petit, Vieira, all those kind of people. And when you're looking at our team, what we want really is consistent partnerships. So there is no way at all that you would touch Bindon and Mbenge at the moment as a centre-half pair, and you just wouldn't do it. Right. And for me, it's the same with the sixes. Lewis Wing, for me, has played the best football of his season, so, you know, in the last few games, because he's had Savage there to be able to do, you know, the dirty work and the stuff off the camera and all the little sly bits that release his wing. And yesterday, I just felt that there was a game there. And this is why I kind of posed that question at the start in terms of saying, was it 2 points drop? Because actually, if you got Lewis Wing higher up the pitch a little bit, which we were crying out for that link, really, to alleviate some of the pressure from Sam Smith, who again didn't have a great game yesterday, you know, would it have made sense potentially just to leave that partnership in place, have Elliot potentially on the bench and bring him on if something needs to be changed later on in the game? I don't know. I'm just posing the questions, and I just feel that
it's tricky.
It is difficult. Yeah, it is. And this is why I'm not a football manager.
No, I know. And it's funny because I kind of wanted, this is why I was saying yesterday, I struggled with how to rate Wing, because like clearly what he was doing yesterday was what he has been asked to do. He had well over, I think he had the most touches of any Reading player. He had over 100 and tons of passes, obviously. And he generated the most expected assists of any Reading player as well. That kind of like speaks to the issue a little bit. Like, I don't really want Wing that far back. And I liked Elliot's performance yesterday. But yeah, like I would agree that I want Wing further forward. Now, that said, if Elliot could generate a long shot in his game, then I think that then this could become quite an interesting setup. And this adds even more depth to the middle of the park, obviously, where we already have two young players playing really well. You know, there's a world here whereby in 2 or 3 years' time, our midfield is Savage, Craig, and Elliot, and it's really, really good. There are definitely three players here who can play together. But I think right now, there are like all three of those young players are missing just like one little aspect from their game because they're young players. Like this happens. And Wing kind of like has the solution to all of those, but he can't be everywhere on the field. So I definitely see what you're saying with wanting, when you have Savage or Craig on the field, that allows Wing to go further forward. And even when you have Savage, even if Wing doesn't go further forward, Savage can shoot from outside of the box too. So maybe Elliot can already do this and I just haven't seen it yet. But if Elliot could add a long shot, you know, a dangerous long shot to his game, similar to Savage's, I think that he's going to get even more game time moving forward.
Yeah, I think the positive to all this, and you know, it is a positive, is that we're talking about a bunch of players that could play, and we're talking, you know, in theory, certainly in the case of Wing, Savage, and Elliot on his best days, could play in any or be in any championship squad, and I guess some of those in some of those starting 11s as well. So we're pretty blessed. We haven't been that blessed for a long time in that department, if ever, if I recall. So it's really positive that we've got these, you know, and we've got Elliot, we've got Savage, who've got great pedigree from their, you know, their previous clubs, regardless of where those clubs find themselves now in their respective leagues or in their league rather. Because I suddenly thought Chelsea got relegated. Don't know why. You know, that they're not doing well, but those players have played with fantastic players, you know, and so, you know, long term, what you'd want is to keep that core. I don't think we will. I think it will be split up this summer. I think a lot of players will leave, but there's a lot of positivity there. And obviously Lewis Wing is I say shoo-in. He's not my player of the season. That's Tyler Bindon, by the way, just in case anyone's wondering.
Nice. But good.
And I could go off on one about him, but you know, certainly those players have got great pedigree and can carry us for the next 2 or 3 seasons if they choose to stay. And I think in the case of Elliot, Just let me. I know you're desperate to jump in.
No, please finish. Elliot,
I think he's been really hard done by this season, and I think I think it's good from a moral point of view that Sellers said I've been unfair to him, but to constantly keep playing him on the wing. We said this after Eastleigh. We said Ben Elliott wasn't a winger, and he struggled against a non-league side out there, and he still continued to play him, and that for me is. I know Sellers is very popular, but that for me as a decision is not good. So that's my 2p's worth on that. Ross, over to you, sir.
Sorry, I tried to cut you off like 2 or 3 times there. My bad. I liked what you said. Cast your mind back, listeners, about 2 minutes ago. Where you said something about how like we're talking about depth and we're talking about players that... you know, like it's exciting that we can't get all of our good players into the lineup right now. And actually I was thinking about that yesterday. They ended up not playing that well, I thought, when they came on. But when Moeller and Ahib Hatchiman came on yesterday, I was like, are we bringing on good subs right now? I don't think we're going backwards.
Yeah.
I was literally
I love Clinton Moeller now. Like he's obviously, I mean, he's not player of the season by any stretch, but he's definitely one of my most improved. And I love the guy. I think he's absolutely fantastic. I love the way he talks as well. Not that any relevance to anything, but I love Clint Amola.
Yeah, but so both of them, right? And Kelvin, we've seen him come on against Oxford, against Northampton, and help us to win points. So, like, we know that's a decent quality substitution. It's kind of like the substitution we all used to think Jamari Clark was in the last couple of years of the championship there. But yeah, they didn't end up playing particularly well. But I think you're right that the way in which, like, some of the younger players have been managed in terms of, like, having Ben Elliott out on the wing, for instance, like, not great. And we had a lot of comments earlier in the season about how Savage was being managed, and whether that was to do with the payment stuff, we don't fully know. But obviously that was rumored at the time. So I think that there's definitely been some spots where Sellers is, you know, man management skills have been under question. But that said, we now seem to have, after starting the season with what, two or three senior players, we now have a squad that actually has, like, reasonable substitutes coming off the bench. And I think that's Sellers. I think that's coaching, personally. I think that's roster management.
This is where I hope it's not, there isn't an element of kind of personalness that's not right. That's not the right word. I hope that the way that he manages these players isn't based on personal attributes and more professionalism. And I'm sure that is the case with Sellers in terms of him being professional about these things. But, you know, we could use the case of Elliot being constantly stitched up, in my opinion, you know, I guess to your opinion as well, Ross, but also, you know, in terms of Savage and the way that he's been managed over the course of the season and other players as well. Like, you know, Michael Craig has had, some good games. He's had some stinkers as well. And you hope that he's been managed in the right way, in a positive way. And all these young players are getting what they need from, you know, mainly from Sellers, because we know what JOP is like, because we had him on the pod. Shameless plug there, by the way, guys. But, like, you know, he was really positive about those young players, and he was really glowing about the relationship that he had and some of the coaching staff had with Noel Hunt and the under 21s. But you just hope that these things are managed properly in house, and that it can develop those players long term, because they'll have a career after Reading Football Club. And, you know, obviously we only care about Reading Football Club, but they're people as well. So we hope that's the case. Overall result then, Ross, was it a good result against Lincoln City? I don't know why I keep saying Lincoln City. Why don't I just say Lincoln?
No, that's all right. I think they are Lincoln.
You know, like we said ages ago about which players do you normally use, is like you always say their both names.
Yeah. Lincoln City. That's true, actually, yeah. Would you ever say Orient for Leighton Orient? Or I would always say Leighton Orient, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'd probably say Leighton Orient, yeah. And I always say Cardiff City. I never say Cardiff.
Cardiff City. Okay. Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's good. Points lost, points gain. It's probably a point gain for me. It's a point gained if not for that handball, right? Like that, because if that happens and we get that penalty, then, like, it might, you know, it may be that we win the game. We've won a lot of games. We've won quite a few games 1-0, haven't we? Especially at home. I think Derby and Northampton are obvious ones that come to mind. So I don't know. We probably did enough to win yesterday, and I thought this was a pretty impressive performance. It would have been nice to get the extra 2 points there. But again, we stopped the form team in the division from doing anything. It was just about, like, it's basically about two quick individual battles won by the Lincoln players around the Reading box for about 2 minutes. And then other than that, they were completely stopped from doing just about anything. Oftentimes by, I thought wing and Yeardom's maturity at the back. So hence why they were kind of playing pretty close together at the back. So, yeah, I mean, it would have been with the way that the game went and with the way that the refereeing decisions went, then I think that Reading did enough to win. But a point here is probably fine. Obviously, it kind of depends on how Tuesday goes, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think realistically we are. I don't even want to say it. You know what I'm getting at. We are. Mm-hmm. you know, I'm it's just like, I'm not going to say
getting
the word.
There.
Don't force me to say it, but don't. I want to say it, but I don't want to say it. So what did you say? We're getting there.
We're getting there. I'm much more confident because I am completely unconfident in the teams below us is basically what's going on here at this point. Like I don't doubt Reading's ability to Reading it up. Like I feel like this happened in the championship season last year, whereby we just slowly slumped into League One after that last point deduction. We just decided, oh well, we just might as well not bother then, and just stop trying. And it was so annoying.
I think what you said about stopping the form team in the division doing nothing, I think is a really great way to sum up that game, because that's exactly what it was. And you can analyze, you know, what they did all you want, but actually they didn't really create anything at all apart from obviously apart from the goal, and that's a really spot on point. And so, you know, looking at other teams and the facts where we are, you know, Carlisle pretty much gone. Well, they are gone, aren't they now? Fleetwood Town, Cheltenham and Burton all occupy the last three spaces. I think Fleetwood are still alive for at least another game, maybe even two, but realistically they're not, you know, I don't see them getting out of trouble.
Cheltenham, and they're only going one way.
Yeah.
Of all of the teams that are in that bottom, so at that bottom four right now, if you combine their last five games together, so let's say 20 games there's two wins. So they're winning 10% of the time. They're not getting out of that zone. And I'm going to sound stupid in 4 weeks' time when we're relegated, but
no, we're not going to be.
Genuinely. No, you're right. Yeah. No, but we have 46 points right now, and I'm genuinely not convinced that four teams are going to get to that right now. Like, I'm not 100% convinced that four of Port Vale, Burton, Cheltenham and Fleetwood or Carlisle are going to get there.
I mean,
which Carlisle obviously aren't. So,
you know, because research is for other people and, you know, professional of a podcast rather than unprofessional jokes, I haven't done my reading around what Cheltenham have still got to do, but they've got six games left and they are currently sat on 38 points. So they're the only one. Burton Albion got absolutely savaged by some random team yesterday, 4-0. And Port Vale have managed to sneak out of it. But, you know, I guess the other thing really is that Cambridge and Shrewsbury have kind of dropped like a stone. Obviously Cambridge have got Gary Monk in charge and they potentially might get out of it. But, I don't know. I just look at it now. We're 17th. We, you know, got four games to play, 46 points. I just feel that, you know, I just feel we've got enough.
We won't preview right now, obviously, but we got Bristol Rovers next, who have lost in recent weeks or tied with, I think, Carlisle they lost to. They didn't lose to Carlisle. They lost to Port Vale. They tied with Shrewsbury. They got done 5-0 by Lincoln. They tied with Fleetwood. So, I mean, they really haven't been pulling up any trees. Admittedly, they didn't concede 5 to Bolton over the weekend, but, you know, only very special teams can do that. So
exactly. And it's not for everyone conceding 5 goals to
playoff
or promotion chasing teams, is it? So it's not really for everybody.
Nah.
What is for everybody is the mailbag, and we always open up to everybody who listens to this pod and everyone who doesn't listen to this pod. It's always there for you, so we're going to get into that right now after this very short break.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Alrighty, mailbag time. We probably need to be a little bit more savvy with this, actually, because we always put it out on Twitter. And actually, we probably need to be putting it out on Facebook and just, I don't know, getting it out somewhere.
And you say it's for everyone. You're like, you know what's for everyone is the mailbag, but it's not. It's Benjamin Fisher's mailbag.
No, it's not.
So, you know, like, yeah. Do we have one from Benjamin today?
No, we haven't, actually. We haven't had one for a while, actually. Okay. I hope he's all right. Benjamin, if you're listening, just tell us you're okay.
Just reach out, mate. We just want to make sure you're all right.
Just send us any. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be about Reading Football Club. Just anything you want. But Benjamin's mailbag is always here. Right, let's start with our beloved Tom Hill. He says, this is a big one to start the mailbag. Does Sellers stay next season?
Yeah. Does he? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, if he wants to, right? Like, I am obviously very pro Sellers. I like him. Partly, I like him, obviously, because he's a very modern manager. And I think that these are things that clubs need to be doing in this day and age. Like, even if you're a League One club or whatever, like, I think that James talked a little bit about how Sellers has allowed him more time to work on, like, the video analysis and to work with those kinds of coaches and just to, like, be doing things in a more, I don't know, thought through structure. I'll quickly rehash a tweet that I made this week that I enjoyed, but I've been listening to The Mixer by Michael Cox, which is excellent. It's a rundown of tactics through the Premier League era. There's a section in there about Sir Alex Ferguson coaching the first great Manchester United team in the mid 90s. And apparently he became frustrated with Paul Ince because he couldn't follow tactical instructions. And I was just thinking, well, doesn't that just totally sum him up?
I sidestep a little bit. I know you don't like talking about Paul Ince, but
I
very rarely watch Sky Sports these days. Not just because I don't have time and there's other stuff on, like wrestling, for example, that isn't on Sky Sports.
Right, it's important.
Yeah, but like there was this thing about him being a Liverpool legend. I can't remember what it was called, but it was on there anyway. And you probably had to get it on their catch up or whatever. And I happened to turn on, it was midway through the episode, and I happened to turn on to this bit where he was basically taking Gerard Houllier apart. You know, I don't know what the demographic our listeners are, but Roy Evans was the manager at Liverpool, and then Gerard Houllier came in and they were like joint managers, which was really, really weird at that time. And then eventually Gerard Houllier took over from Roy Evans. And after Roy Evans was sacked, I don't know, not sure. Anyway. And he was basically, and I didn't like him, is this. And in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, because he was a bit forward thinking, wasn't he, for you, Paul? Like, right, he came up with, like, nutrition and tactics and don't just hoof the ball and run around kicking people for fun. And in my head, I'm like, this guy's played for Inter Milan, right? He actually did pretty well over there. And yet he's going, yeah, I didn't like this guy. And I'm like, who are you? Like, your success rate as a manager is absolutely horrendous. And yet you're carving up Gerard Houllier. I just thought it was ridiculous.
I think Paul Ince is
my
one of those odd
story for the pod.
No, yeah, he's one of those odd gentlemen that, like, I think that he's just got a chip on his shoulder about something, hasn't he? Like, even though he had a fantastic career, he seems to think he was hard done by. And he may well have a point on some things. I don't know enough about his career, to be honest with you, but yeah. But anyway, I like Sellers. And that's where we were on, right? We were on whether Sellers stays this season. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, and we're still talking about Paul Ince. Like, we probably
it's
need a
2 minutes on Paul Ince.
Yeah, you're like, it's still there. It's still like a dark still shadow hanging over the club.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a cloud on a sunny day, you know, it's not good. Regardless of what I've said, Paul Ince was one of my heroes growing up as a player. I loved him at Inter Milan. I thought it was absolutely fantastic at Inter Milan. But anyway, and I had the posters of him and all sorts. But anyway, I digest.
Digress.
that was a joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. I want Sellers to stay. That's my overriding point. I think he's a modern manager and that's my kind of guy.
Okay, what do I think? No one asked, but I'll answer anyway.
What do you think, Ben?
If we stay up, when we stay up, he deserves the opportunity to have another go next season. Mm-hmm. I don't know, based on current soundings from him, based on my overall perception of the situation, if he will personally choose to do that. So if... Well, I say if, when the new owners come in, if they turn around and go, right, you're gone, with him having stayed up or kept us up, that would be a really, really bad move to do as a new ownership group. So for me, he deserves that. Do I personally think that he can, you know, mould the team and add to it and, you know, create a team that's capable of a top six push? I don't know, is the honest answer.
Yeah.
I really
that's a very know. Good
but I he think deserves the opportunity to give it a good go But what we can't have is what we had, where it took 15, 16 games for us to settle down and actually get into some sort of rhythm. Because by then, you know, we're either in trouble or the opportunity to get promoted has long since gone. So, short answer, Tom, Ross is definitely, 100% for me. He's earned the right to do that if and when we stay up. And it's, I think it then becomes his decision in terms of whether or not he sees the project with this football club, whether he needs a break. And I don't think anyone would begrudge him based on the absolute nonsense that he's had to deal with time and time again from this football club, or whether someone else comes in and goes, do you know what, you can come and work for a championship club or come and be part of a coaching team higher up the pyramid. I don't know. But that's kind of where we're at with it. But it's a good question. And it's one that I think if you asked any Reading fan, they'd have, I guess, differing views on it based on how they see his tactics and stuff.
One thing I think makes it quite so there's two things with Sellers. I think we need to see an improvement in the finishing from players who are getting good chances, because we generate a lot of chances. We're one of the best attacks in the division and have been for a very long time now. I think that we need to basically get more clinical and finish more of those chances. So in terms of the like on-field improvement, that's what needs to happen. Something that interests me, I don't know what he's going to be like if and when we have a budget. Because if I think back to the transfers that came in this season, I think that the ones that have been successful have primarily been Bowen's transfers. I could be wrong about that, and I could be wrong about who is attached to who, but it appeared to me that Savage was partly down to Bowen and Wing and Elliot and these kinds of players. And the one that sticks out as the one that came from Sellers is Makairu, who hasn't really hit the ground running, hasn't really been even like a team player at times. Like I've seen him getting in arguments with Sam Smith and other various players when they've been on the field, and I doubt his loan will be extended. So that might be one of the few black marks on Sellers this season that I think hasn't, I don't think we've had enough finances to really test it out, but
no, transfers will still be an issue, but you know, when people whinge about Mark Bowen, which I do understand to a point, you know, for me, he stays just for his recruitment alone, because you can't knock anything he's brought in. Like the quality of the players, the attitude of the you know, the profile, the personal profile of the players that he's brought in has been brilliant. And I think on that basis alone, he does stay. I see a lot of people going, well, with Sellers, he didn't have a pre-season. You don't get 15, 16 games in a preseason, which, you know, isn't comparable. But what you do get is the 2-3 months it took for him to actually go, okay, we're going to do it like this. What concerns me about Sellers is his stubbornness. You know, when he was doing the four, you know, at the start of the season, he was picking that formation and it just wasn't working, but he kept persisting with it and no one was happy with it and he wasn't changing it. Whereas, you know, now it's almost, I feel like he's just tinkering it or tinkering with it for the sake of it in some respects. Again, that's just my personal opinion, and people come back and say, well, actually, that's nonsense and that's fine. But I'm still not really completely convinced. But as I've always said, massively grateful for his attitude and his behaviour and the way that he's conducting himself with stuff off the field, because he shouldn't have had to deal with that. So that's where we're at with that. Ryan Jeffries, beloved Ryan again. It's been quite nice, actually. We've had, I don't know if it's great or sad, but the three comments or the questions that we've had have all been from you know, fairly regular guests on our podcast.
The regulars, so, okay, nice.
Thanks, gents. Yeah. I appreciate that. Oh, we appreciate that. Yeah. Ryan says, and this is, we were talking about this off air, Ryan, this is really an absolute monster of a question. And I think we're probably going to do something separate on this, which you are now legally going to have to be involved with. And this is something well done. Stitch yourself right up. This is something for you guys as listeners to think about as well. If you had to pick a starting 11 with one player from each of the last 11 years, what would it be? That's hard.
I can't do that right off the bat. Like, I can't even remember what happened yesterday, let alone 11 years ago. So that's going to be a tricky one. Is there anyone who would definitely be coming back for you? I'm trying to think back. I know Sim would have Felipe Araruna. He loves him.
I mean, I, you know, I'd have to start with the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And it'd have to be Al Habsi for me.
Okay. I'd still probably take Federici within that time period. Or even, I don't know if Alex McCarthy was still playing for us then. I loved Alex McCarthy. For
well, hold on. What's it? I've done the most here. What's 11 years?
Yeah. That's what, 2013. So we were in, it's the second half of the, it's the Premier League season and then the 10 seasons, or 9 seasons in the Championship and then League One, right? I think. I don't even know. This is a video. This is a longer video, isn't it?
Who else would, I mean, I don't know. Like, again, are you looking at it? So you're going to have to pick someone from this season. So who would you pick from this? Let's do that. For me, it'd be Tyler Bindon.
Tyler Bindon, yeah. I know. I'm like, I'm going Tyler Bindon every single day of the week. I think Lewis Wing alongside.
You could, but then you've got John Swift, mate. So what do you do?
So you go, so Swift and Wing together in a midfield would be pretty, I'm not sure how much would get done, but boy, it would look good. You know, it would be fun to watch whatever happened.
Yeah, but now you've got me questioning the goalkeeper because I wasn't doing my maths. So 2013 would be McCarthy, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I would go for McCarthy personally because he was like Federici, but taller. And that's, I think there's a reason McCarthy was moved on pretty quickly. Like he had the frame to be a quality goalkeeper. Although my Saints fan parents moan about McCarthy all the time. And I try not to rise to it. You know, it's annoying.
No, don't just ignore him. If you can, just let him wash over you. Gareth McCleary. I think he'd get in my team.
Yeah, that's a good one. Is Chrissy Gunter coming back for you?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I don't understand when people slag him off because he played over 100 times for his country, right? There was what, 3 or 4 Reading managers who consistently picked him. That says something about the player, right?
I mean, how much did Phil Bardsley play for Gibraltar, though? You know, like, players can play for different teams.
Yeah, maybe. But Chris Gunner's coming. Well, I mean, have we done it? We haven't done it. We're nowhere near. So what about strikers? What are you saying for strikers?
Strikers? yeah, definitely Yakubu. Nick Blackman. Very decent, you know.
Yeah, but you're biased, though, because you did that stunning pod with him. So
he was a nice lad, yeah. So, that's why I'm giving him his props, yeah, for sure. I don't know. Let's just, like, have some fun. Stick some Royston Drenthe out there and just go for it. I think we need to get some more Tyler Herstead and contributors together for this one, though.
I mean, you could make a series out of that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, this is a good. I want to properly think this out, including, you know, I need to properly lay out my formation, work out how we're gonna play, you know, work out if we're gonna do a Sellers pressing thing or if we're gonna do a Brian McDermott, hoof the ball to Noel Hunt and hope for the best sort of thing. Whatever.
Strikers is an interesting one, actually. The other thing as well, and an extension, a slightly more rubbish version of what Ryan asked, and I asked this to Ross off air. If you had to choose a 5-a-side team from the current squad,
that I can do.
Who would be in it?
Yeah.
So Pereira's straight in, isn't he?
Yep. So Pereira goes straight in there because Pereira. Something I really like about Pereira is his throwing distribution. It's something you just do not get from Button at all. He just doesn't have it in his locker, and it doesn't happen that often from Pereira. I was looking back and I think because it's striking how little we had that from Button, it just appears like it's more than it is. It's about 2 or 3 times a game. But that's something. And obviously you're playing 5-a-side, like it's a smaller game. Like, are we talking about playing in like one of those like cages in London here, or are we talking about playing something a bit bigger? See, I would play. So we play 6-a-side in my group, and we play on a half field.
I've seen what you guys do, right? I've seen American 6-a-side. We're talking about 5-a-side at goals in Woodley in a cage.
Yeah,
ball doesn't go dead, just carnage. So for that reason alone, Big Kelvin's going in because he can just.
Oh, interesting. That's a good. A good pick. He'd go wherever he wants. He shifts the ball very well from one foot to the other as well.
Finishing is deathly. Deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. Not deathly. No, so that's a good one because I don't have a finisher in my list. So I got Pereira, obviously. Yeah. And I think we've both got Bindon. And I expect that we both have Savage as 100%. Well down.
Yeah. Tell me, it wouldn't start energy.
So I've got Vinden, Pereira, and Savage. And then my other two are yesterday's star, Ben Elliott.
Okay.
Again, I think five-a-side's about wriggling between two challenges. You know, like some people come in there to challenge you and you got to get out from between that little space. Elliott can do that. And then I got Nibs because the main thing, when I'm filtering teams for five-a-side, right? When I'm putting teams together and making sure no one's too overpowered or, you know, or going to get completely steamrolled, one of the main things I look for are the guys that run and they make a lot of tackles because they are the guys that they just break up the rhythm of the other team and they make it, you know, they just give you a little bit of gumption in your engine room, and Nibs is the gumption in our engine room. Nibs was, we didn't mention this in the review, Nibs was excellent yesterday. Really good. I thought he was brilliant.
What did you give him?
I really liked him.
What did you give him? I didn't read it.
I gave him a 7. I gave him a 7 yesterday, and I thought he was excellent.
I don't know.
I think this was partly down. However, I'll put the caveat in there. I think it's partly because Wing wasn't there, so Nibs had to do something. You know, like Nibs was the one who was in that space that Wing has been drifting into at times, and you know, when he's playing in the 4-2-3-1. So I thought Nibs was good yesterday. But
did you run the stats on Nibs? Did you use that thing that we're not going to talk about?
The progressive. What do you want to know about?
Did you use a popular statistical analysis application to work out what Nibs actually did?
No, I watched him in the game. I mean, like I always. So the way this is actually a good behind the curtain sort of thing, right? When I'm writing ratings,
I've watched the game. Know, that's the secret to this. I just watched.
Yeah, watch the game is the secret, basically. Yeah. No, sir. Honestly, that's a good line for like anyone who wants to get more into football. Just watch the darn games.
yeah, exactly.
It always bothers me about certain pundits who clearly don't like football. They like the, you know, the show that goes around it. But yeah. No, so just a quick, like, if you guys don't know, I write the ratings for the Tirehurst Den, and it's a lot of fun. I try to stop myself. I only allow myself to look at stats twice during the game, and that's once at halftime. To go and see, I want to go and check, like, how are people getting on so far? And then I'll do it after I've given everyone a rating at the end of the game. And if you go in before that, you're going to be likely to, you know, adjust your ratings based on the stats that you see. And I do think that they should be more eye test based normally. But no, Nibs had a pretty good statistical game yesterday. Another 7 recoveries, another 5 defensive actions. So I mean he did his normal Nibs things. Yeah, I thought he was pretty decent, but partly because there was no Wing right next to him.
Difficult, from what we can gather, difficult personal week for Harvey Nibs as well. So you know, on the off chance that he's listens to this, and if, even if he's not, you know, we wish him and his family all the best. And you know, whichever way you spin it, he's had a fantastic season. He's what's he scored? 14, 15 goals, you can't argue with it,
yeah.
Really.
So it's getting up there,
you know, for me on the eye test, I wasn't particularly convinced with him yesterday. But do you know what? He's got enough money in the bank to be able to I say get away with it. That sounds awful, but have those sort of games. And I think you're right. I think because kind of maybe Wing wasn't up there and you know egging him on. It's a chain for me. It's Savage helps Wing. Wing helps Nibs. That's you know that's just me. But yeah, we wish him all the best and hope that his family are okay as well. So yeah. Final question from Bobbins. Best flavour of hula hoop. You know what a hula hoop is, right?
I do know what a hula hoop is, fine. Yes. Don't worry.
Is there an equivalent in America? That's what he asks.
That's a good question. Fritos are kind of like hula hoops. Fritos are corn chips. Fritos are kind of like hula hoops. There is almost but, like
well unspooled. Hula hoops are made out of maize. They're not well mind you that is corn, isn't it?
It is corn, isn't it? Yeah, I don't even know. Whatever.
Anyway, go on. What flavor are you saying?
Fritos are all kinds of different sort of flavors. You get regular like corn ones that taste a lot like hula hoops. But yeah, I guess sun chips. I think you get sun chips in England, do you not? Is that not a thing?
You know hula hoops are round, don't you?
Yeah, I know hula hoops are round. For some reason, my brain is thinking of skips. There's no who there's no oh, okay, yeah, so there's no like you know, like ring or hoop shaped chip potato.
Well, there
crisp.
Is Funyuns.
Well, yeah, I guess. Are you? Oh, Fritos as well. You can put those on your fingers, like witch's claws or whatever. I'm gonna have. Oh God, I'm all over the place. Do you know what's bad? I'll be honest with you. I moved to America, and the only brands of potato chip that I eat are like Lay's and Kettle Chips, both of which you can get, you know, in the UK. Well, I know Lay's are Walkers, but yeah, it's the same thing, isn't it? If you put Gary Lineker on it, I wouldn't blink an eye. They're slowly, do you know what? Speaking of British food in America, McCain, the guys who make chips, are slowly making their way out here. And they've brought the little smiley face potato things that you get, which are great. And I see them coming in. I'm like, bring me my home chips. Please, please bring me home chips. Because I have to deal with steakhouse fries or French fries here. It's bullshit. Give me my
fucking... You need a middle ground,
don't
you?
Give me my home fries. Yeah, I'm going to bleep that in the... edit, sorry.
just digressing slightly, so there's a guy, well, a guy who runs a shop, I guess, in the Oracle. So when you come out of when you park the car in the Oracle, you come out of the lift, it's pretty good marketing, so he must make a mint. But he's literally like in the foyer of the lift, the main lift foyer of the Oracle, and he sells like loads of American stuff.
I know that guy. Yeah.
Right?
I do know that guy.
And he sells like Prime, and you know, all the kids love it. And he sells like all different variations of Cheetos. And I love Cheetos, right? I've always loved Cheetos. And there was a bag in there. I walked past the other day and said, oh, I wonder what they are. He was selling a bag of Cheetos for like 12 quid. I was like, you're taking the mick a little bit, mate. I know there's import tax. I know there's VAT. I know you've got to pay to get it across the border or whatever. But goodness me, £12 for a bag of crisps is nonsense. So
if you've got any American treats that you like, get them in, you know, ask questions in the next mailbag. So I'll definitely answer questions about this. The things I always end up taking back home for my family are, there are these things called trolley sour crawlers, and they're kind of like Tang Fast Sticks, but with way more E numbers, way more colorings and all those kinds of things. And then Goldfish, which you might know about, which are kind of like mini cheddars. They're Goldfish shaped mini cheddars. Those are very popular. Those are really good. I do like those.
Well, I mean, to actually answer the question, Bobbins, the best flavor of hula hoop is beef. And on that note, we're going to go straight to the preview.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right. From one B to another, we are off to Bristol. Rearranged from the 23rd of March, I believe, because we are a massive club and we have international call-ups, whereas other League One clubs do not because they are smaller than us. But we are off to Bristol on Tuesday night. Sold out away end once again, which again it's a testament to the fan base. Really, it's quite incredible. I mean, it's you know, going up to Bolton the other Monday. You know, not great weather. Weekend of I guess, you know, drinking and eating and all the rest of it, and there was still 1,400 people up there. You know, it was quite incredible. And again, you know, I know Bristol's technically just down the road, but that's another sellout. So you have to applaud the following, particularly away from home, because it's been incredible. Bristol Rovers are kind of going nowhere very quickly. They're in a group with technically Wickham, Wigan, Exeter, maybe Northampton as well. So there's a bunch of teams really that are on the beach. And I'd put Bristol Rovers in there. They're sat on, they're 15th. And they're currently on 51 points, so they're well clear of the relegation zone. Miles off the playoffs, 20 points, 21 points, something like that. So, that you know, they can't get it. Legally and mathematically, they can't go anywhere, really. And they're in that kind of middle bracket of teams that have got nothing left to play for. Good time to play them then, Ross, potentially?
Probably. Because like we talked about a little bit earlier, they've really been going in one direction and they've been picking up pretty poor results against poor teams. I think that they're pretty close to being the negative form team in the division. I think it's only Burton that are worse than them in the previous five games. So this would appear to be a good time to play them. Now, obviously, sometimes when you've got towards the last few home games of the season, the teams will show up and try and put on a performance for their fans. But I think that if we play the way that we played against Lincoln, we have far too much for Bristol at this stage of the season. And I also think, we talked about how I'm not even convinced that four teams can get to 46 points, which is what we currently have. If we get to 49 points in this game, we're making our way onto that beach, just the same as Bristol, I think. So this should be what I think. There should be so much motivation to just go out there, get that win, and then come back. The last few weeks of the season are a little bit easier. You can start thinking about the summer earlier, not have to worry about crunch games right into the last few weeks of the season. Reading could basically get themselves home and hosed against Bristol Rovers, and I think that they've got everything they need to do it.
Yeah, I mean, just on that note, Ross mentioned the form that Bristol Rovers were in, or rather weren't in. Over the last six games, they picked up 2 points, two draws in that time, obviously, because you can't get 2 points otherwise. They do have Chris Wiley.
I don't know, mate. Reading can do it pretty well. We can win a draw and a win and not pay the taxes.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, that is a good point. But we have a lunatic owner. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah. They do have Chris Martin, though, 15 goals. So it's a pretty good return for
Okay, so it's going to be 2-1 to Reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For context, over the last six games, we picked up 7 points and we're sort of mid table or lower mid table.
And we've been playing a bit poorly by our standards in the last 4 weeks. Yeah, the fact that we're still sort of like just going in the right direction, I think it's a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, we sort of touched on it earlier, really. Do you think Sellers will make changes for this game unless he absolutely has to, or does he just stick as it was for the game against Lincoln?
I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those games like Port Vale, whereby we sort of try something different in the first half and the second half. Because I think that with there being this many, I think that Sellers is going to want to play the strongest possible team that he thinks he can play. Because again, I think that he will also have one eye on, let's get this win and then we're done, basically. If you want to keep some players healthier for the weekend as well, then you might change things up. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see the exact same lineup in the first half. And if that's not working against Bristol, then maybe bringing on Savage and going to that 4-2-3-1. But it's a little bit tricky for me to say, because I wouldn't say that I've fully identified yet what it is that Sellers was kind of planning on when he moved it to the 4-1-4-1 for this game against Lincoln. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a big change at halftime. I think it'll be same lineup going into the game, but then something, unless we're two up or one up at the end of the first half, then I can see there being some relatively large shape changes like we saw against Port Vale, for instance.
I mean, just doing a quadruple preview here, we've got four games left to play, and just to run those down. So we've got obviously got Bristol away on Tuesday. We then go to Barnsley on Saturday, the 13th. We then got, a break, but, they're training through the week, and we go to Burton, the final away game of the season, which is also inflatables. Feasibly, Burton could well be in a situation where they're still needing to win to stay up. Well, realistically, they are going to be, because they're well in the mire there. And if the season ended now, they'd be relegated, because they're the final spot in that relegation zone. And then, of course, we have Blackpool last game of the season on the 27th, and they are really pushing for that last playoff spot. So you look at Bristol Rovers as the game that you really want to go for. And then, to be honest, you go to Barnsley, and they're not, I don't think anyone's confirmed a playoff spot yet, apart from, the top two. Well, certainly Portsmouth have anyway, if it all goes wrong with them. But Barnsley are going to do well to drop out of that in terms of the chasing pack below them. So, yeah, certainly just go and get the job done now, because in theory it could be on paper and where those teams are positioned, the easiest game in inverted commas that we've got. So 100% I'd be going there for the win and just go, look, just get it done, lads. Just let us enjoy the last few three games. We all deserve it. Players deserve it. Management teams deserve it. Every single person at the club deserves for us to be going into those last three games and go, do you know what? Let's have a party. Let's just enjoy it for what it is. And I still think we're okay now, but I would agree with a lot of people saying, look, we need one more win, and that draws a line under it. So, yeah. Let's see what happens. If you go,
I want to see.
Go on.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, last thing I'll say about it is that I want this to be the week that kind of it ties this week in a ties this season in a nice bow, and then gives us some hope for next season as well, because I think we have been playing like a playoff team for the last 4 months now, really. And it's going to be about showing that we can progress beyond from a playoff team to an automatic promotion challenging team for next season. That's kind of important to try and turn this team from that playoff challenging team to an automatic challenging team in the summer. I know this sounds ridiculous when your club is in 17th place, but I do feel that if you look at the underlying numbers, you can see that if we can just improve our finishing, we're really going places, and maybe as soon as next season if we can keep a lot of this cast around. So get a win against Bristol, we tie a bow on this season. Get a win against Barnsley, and we're now looking up and thinking, all right, what can we do next season? We know these players are capable of competing with and beating players who are playing for the playoffs in League One. So what can we do to improve this and take it beyond there? I think that could be a great week for Reading, and hopefully 6 points. I'd be happy with three, but six would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, by the time you listen to this, we'll have 19 days or less left of the season. So it seems like the perfect opportunity to really just get it done and go for it. And as Ross said, tie whatever colour bow you want on this season and push it to the back of the cupboard and never speak of it ever again.
Apart from the like Princely shirt
that Ross is currently wearing, which has sold really well, I gather. Really well, unsurprisingly. I would say we're going to be back next week. We are, but we've got a bonus pod coming up in the next couple of days with Mr. Tim Kilpatrick, who some of you will know is the head of commercial, but also looks after the media department currently as well. So we've got a few questions for him to ask, and he's very kindly agreed to come on and just, you know, explain some of the stuff that's been going on, really. So that'll be out alongside this. Have a really good week. If you're going up to Bristol and then Barnsley, enjoy it. Stay safe. Pick up some wins for us, and we will be home and dry, very much home and dry, if we get 6 points over the next two results. We will see you very soon here on the Tireless End podcast. Thank you as always for your ears and your minds and your contributions and your positive vibes and everything else, and we will see you soon. Come on, you arse.